From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this,
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
The Black Fat Femme Podcast is a production of iHeartRadio and Dr. John Paul, LLC. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Black Fat Femme Podcast, where all the intersections of identity are celebrated. I am one of your hosts, John, also known as Dr. John Paul. And before we start this episode, we need to pay our respects. Chris, can you please add some church music here? We're just going to go ahead and go down to the altar because, you know, I'm going to get emotional because y'all don't understand how important this topic is to me. Oh, no. So if you know me, you know I love a good dessert more than anything. I love a good cookie. And Lord, I just want to say that Knott's, they announced that they discontinued with the shortbread cookie, girl. And I'm assuming that there's no place in heaven, because now these cookies have no place to go. There's no such thing as heaven, Lord Jesus. Not shortbread cookies. We speak your name. I'm so sad. I really am.
Oh my God.
Even though somebody said that the little things in the middle of the cookie taste like glue.
They're lying. They taste
right,
delicious.
Right.
Especially when they come in as sorbet of flavors.
But yeah, they're gone.
Okay. Bitch, the way I actually thought someone died, the way you had me thinking like we're actually going to grieve over something or someone, you had me in my Sunday best for a cookie?
Yes, God. That's the only way to do
for
it.
For some shortbread?
Yes.
For some shortbread?
Yes. They're gone.
I just cannot.
We actually, and it's not even just the cookie. They discontinued their whole entire line. So them bitches said no jellies. They said no cookies, nothing.
Wait, no jellies as in like.
The Knott's jelly is discontinued. Yeah, girl.
Like, I can't get my little grape jelly from them?
Nope.
I mean, wait, hold on.
Well, you can. Actually, the thing is, though, you have to do it now. Because if you don't, then it'll be gone. I think they discontinued. So basically at this point, wherever you can get it, you can get it. But if you got it, you got it. And that's it. That's it.
Okay.
Wow.
That is a Gagarella. Yeah. Gagatron. Gagagonza. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. I do need a moment myself then, because I love it. I mean, obviously I don't love big brands and highly processed shit, but no. I also do love Knott's shit. Like, I love that highly processed shit. So,
amen.
Wow. Okay. I was sipping out for the homies right there. Who fam, it is. It's your boy Jordan, aka Grieving Girl Joho. Whew, wow. Today I'm counting my blessings though, because recently I was face to face with the Rona again. Like, and I mean face to face as in
like someone you knew had it and didn't tell you.
Like someone I knew had it, and then they told me like when they tested positive, when I saw them they were negative, but the next day they tested positive. But this person, this bitch is always, it's always a bitch who always has whenever I see them, and I'm like, girl, I can't trust you no more.
Because every time I cannot I trust see you no you're more. Sick.
Every time I see you gets it, but like.
You just gotta hang out with them with the shield. That's what that is.
I'm saying, well, well, the issue is that Chris bleeped this way, and so whenever I see this Negro, like, like, you know, the thing, like I stay with them. So like every time I visit and stay with them, every time I come back, they're like, oh, I have just COVID. I'm like, first of all, bitch, you gotta stop doing it. Like, well, I don't know what's happening here, but also we did all the same things. So, like, what's happening? Like, what's happening? Like, is my body resistant now? Because if it is, I pray it is.
But did you get all of the shots?
Oh, you know it. Okay. Oh, you know I
even
know
the most
I did.
Recent one?
You know. Oh, you know I did. Okay. I got that shit in October, okay? Oh, yeah, and I had to pay for it, too. So I definitely know I got that shit. Because I had to pay for it out of pocket myself. And I was like, that is some bullshit.
Yeah.
I mean, that said, if by the time this episode comes out and I'm still good, like, God is great, y'all. If by this episode comes out, I am not good, I will know that I got God. But until then, for now, it's been 4 days since I've seen them, and I've been feeling good so far. Said that we've done all the same things together, so I'm like, okay, if they've gotten it from whatever we did, but most likely I'm probably good if I haven't had anything yet. Yeah. So knock on wood though, but pray for me because that is just not
funny thing.
Lord, so Jesus, I was like,
related but not related. It's actually not related at all. I'm looking at your nails. For people who are watching this, I'm looking at your nails. We have the same nail color again. Our nail color is close to the same color. Is it yours, like a brownish?
I was like,
like a brownish.
Yes,
beige?
Yes. So these two are just colored because this one had broke, and so I had to get this. I was so sad, John. Just real quick, because these nails are my real nails.
Oh,
my nails
okay.
Are actually this long, and I was playing pickleball, the dangerous white sport of pickleball, and this one cracked.
What is pickleball?
This one cracked. Pickleball, it's like if tennis and pinball had a child. Like, the ball is a wiffle ball, and you use paddles, but so it's like ping pong in the sense of like a paddle, and then but the court is like half a tennis court, and similar style, but a little bit different, and you just hit the ball back and forth, but you have different certain points.
Okay.
You have certain rules and stuff, and the waffle ball, allegedly, apparently, if you hit hard enough and smash your nail, bitch, you'll crack. So this nail cracked. This and my thumbnail both cracked. So which hurt like a
I
bitch.
Believe it.
The folks who have said, I have not had a broken nail yet like that before. So people who are like, oh, it hurts when nail breaks. I'm like, y'all are playing in my face.
It really does.
No, they're actually right. It hurts like, because the way it also hit, like it hit like on the, like on like the skin part. So that whole nail like was like bent, what like broke off, but it was like attached to the skin. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God. And it was bloody. It was so nasty. I'll just say, I was in the Bay last week and I had to go to, I went to a nail place.
Yeah.
And this girl, like, but bless her soul, she saved my thumbnail. It was cracked, but she saved it, so it's still my nail. And then she put on a tip for this. But then she also made them hella pointy. And I was like, oh, girl, give me my little stiletto nail. So I can shank bitches with it. Now her slashing ties and popping balloons and shit, which I love.
Yeah, mine are not super stiletto yet, but they're getting there. The more the lady does them, the more, because mine are some of, I would say half of them are real. Like my nails under the nail are long. It's just my nails are a little more fragile, but they're starting to become more long enough to be able to do stiletto and yada yada yada. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that out, that our nails, per come usual, are close to the same.
Always in synchronicity.
That's what it is. It's the sister power. We've been doing this for almost 2 years, and so our mind be in the same place all the time.
Sister!
I know that's right. Well, with that being said, we're going to start off Black Fat Fam tradition by giving Miss Tisha Campbell her flowers, as we always do every week in our Still Here section. And I wanted to ask you a question that has absolutely nothing to do with anything of anything. I mean, obviously, we know that this week our god, Beyonce, announced that she is giving us Act Two. And baby, when I tell you that I literally on Monday was digging in my closet to make sure I still had my cowboy boots and that I went on to Amazon and reordered my hat, I am so damn ready for the Yeehaw agenda. My God, today.
First of all, okay, so I have to say, now I get the context clue she was giving us since the Renaissance tour, right? Mm-hmm. She was telling us to come in our cowboy attire when she got on Renee and had a little hat on. I was like, oh, I see now. She said from jump, we going to do country next, get ready for it.
Yes.
Also, can we talk about that commercial she did? I know Verizon said, we're giving you our entire annual budget.
Please.
Please don't fuck this up for us because
we will go broke.
We'll go broke.
Yeah.
And it worked. It was so cute. Low key, Beyonce deserves an Emmy for this. Mm-hmm. I was like, she's giving us primetime acting. Okay. Yeah. I was like, she's giving us more words than she has said ever publicly in 1 minute and 30 seconds. Also, when she said drop the new music, I was like, wait, huh? New music? What new music? Whew.
Everybody.
Whew, girl.
The interwebs was scouring. Even me, I was like, at one point, I was like, new music? But I knew it was coming. I was in the mind of, like, I feel like, and this is what I told someone else on another friend to the show who listens, my friend Fallon. We were talking about Beyonce and the trajectory of, like, Ivy Park and things of that nature. And I was saying, I even think since, like, early pandemic, she's been giving us hints that we're going there, like with the whole Ivy Park and the blue and the denim and like the cowboy. And then, you know, we would see blue even in certain situations, like blue would be wearing a cowboy hat and things. So it's like, I feel like in typical Beyonce fashion. And I also say this related to Beyonce, but not related to Beyonce. If you've noticed, every time you see the other DC girls, you see Kelly or you see Michelle, they're always dressed in the same color. If you pay attention to all of their pictures, whenever they're like together or they're doing something in the same vicinity, I've been noticing.
Oh, yes,
like recently, they were all in red together. I think it was Beyonce. I think it was Jay-Z's birthday just recently. Jay-Z's birthday party. Mm. They were all in black. So I also feel like they're giving us context clues of like what. And I'm not saying I think this is law. I'm just saying like if they were to announce that Act Three is a reunion and then they're done, like all of them are done with music, I wouldn't be surprised. Like I wouldn't be surprised.
I'd be surprised. I would ask for nothing else from Beyonce. I'm like, Beyonce, you've done your job. You're done.
Yeah.
You can stop now. Yeah. It's fine. I mean. I would be gagged at that entirely. It also, I mean, I was hoping she'd just give us the visuals. that's all we're asking for. Mm-hmm. Like we said visuals, and she said, "How about hair units?" And then how about
Secret? Yes,
Secret. Which I mean, first of all, I was like, "No, I would love a Beyonce bundle. That sounds great." Like I'm here for it. Right. I'm here that she is in her bag to choose something different, right? Because she also like she didn't go the makeup route. She did go the perfume route, but she said, "I'm gonna do something that y'all have not done yet, bitch. I'm gonna give you hair
products."
I was like, okay, honestly,
which only makes sense because her mom is a hairstylist. So I mean, her whole life.
Yes.
And it's funny because I saw on another podcast someone said, "I can't trust Beyonce's hair care products. We've never seen Beyonce's real hair." However, there are clips out there that where we have seen like Tina playing in Beyonce's hair, or we've seen Tina brushing out Beyonce's hair, and even like down to like Blue, like in the actual Renaissance movie, we saw Tina combing Blue's hair. And so I'm going,
obviously,
whatever they're using, it's got to be good because Blue's hair is magnificently long. So
okay, so it's just, so it's just hair care products.
Yeah.
It's not like she's not selling units.
It's
she's
not
just,
units. It's just hair care products.
I see. Well then, regardless, the girl is doing the damn thing, and I also just have to give it up. I have to give it up real quick. For a good sex, I do it too much. I do it too much on the show, I swear to God. For a good sex, or a good sick.
Ooh, girl, you got to cut that out, Chris. But a good sis and good sex.
A good sex. Dexter Mayfield, who went viral for creating a fantastic dance to Texas Hold'em. This ain't Texas.
Yeah,
ain't no holding, okay, I'm with his bestie and roommate Matt McCall. Yeah. It was, I was here for it. Y'all made me want to find some cowboy boots real quick and go have a little hoedown.
Yes,
but if I did that, then you'd have a hoedown.
I know that's
on
right.
the ground.
Yeah.
And I need help.
Yeah.
Okay,
it's very cute.
But really,
26 million
it's cute.
Views. Mm-hmm.
In counting. Yeah. Also, there was a publication that like they wrote a good article, but in the caption they had referenced Dexter as just a body positive influencer, yeah, to which I was like, I hear you, but like, can we also put respect on their name?
Right.
That they are a phenomenal dancer. They've been in popular music videos before. Okay, they're just in Water Slide, Gemini. They're in Booty from South Santana. Like, give them some respect. Like, yes, the roomie is cute and all, and like, is a good dancer as well. But let's just be clear, Dexter is also a dancer.
Right,
okay,
right.
Giving us performance. So I had commented like, this is so great, and I'm gonna let y'all finish. But let's be clear.
Let's be clear.
Dexter's our girl. Okay. That girl.
In the words of Rihanna, let's be clear. Yeah, so I will say I appreciate, you know, people always try to play in our face, especially around us being who we are and how we move things. Mm-hmm. And part of me even would say, like, I'm frustrated because there's a part of me, and again, y'all can come for me. I'm always open to it. Y'all gonna do it anyway. But I had to say it on the mic. Like, I almost wonder would that video even be viral if his handsome, more masculine presenting colleague, is it his best friend? You said his roommate?
Bestie and roommate.
Right. If he was not in the video, would that video have gone viral? I just always have to ask
That's honestly something that I was thinking. I mean, I will say, I do think it would have, because I think that's what does goes viral, period. And I know people's receptions was not even on the dance itself.
Yeah.
It was on something else. So I was like, mm-hmm. y'all are really just like playing. Like, yes. Like, we can do that. And we also can acknowledge like the talent that is on the screen right now.
Right. But, and that's what it is. Yeah. Like, Dexter's just an amazing dancer. I think Dexter, anytime I see them dancing or anytime I see them doing anything, I'm always thrown at how talented they are. But
they're fucking amazing.
They are. And I would even go the distance to say, and I think this is a conversation that a lot of folks are having now, you know, the biggest convo in all of this now is, you know, oh, Beyonce's reclaiming country music. And I'm like, actually, no. What we're seeing is Beyonce strategically, like she always does, reminding us about a genre of music that once belonged to Black people that was co-opted by white people and taken over by white people, in turn made to make us believe that we are breaking into something. And that's not the case. You know, same thing with, you know, Renaissance and dance music. Renaissance, you know, people, oh, Beyonce's doing dance music. Oh, that's so cool. And I'm going, no, Beyonce is reminding us that dance music started in a basement with two Black queer DJs because they were pushed there. Like, they didn't get it. They didn't have a choice to be in that basement. Mm. They were told they had to be there. And so that's where electronica, and that's where, you know, acid, you know, what a lot of people refer to as acid dance and all of that's where that was born. And it's the same thing with country, right? If you listen to Little Richard, if you listen to Rosetta Tharpe, if you listen to a lot of these folks, even if you listen like, and I know I'm mentioning folks who are big in rock, if you truly listen to the lyrics of their songs and you listen to the gist of what they're singing about, even though it has a rock line through it, don't get me on my music, because y'all know music is my thing.
Well, so, okay, so I appreciate you saying this, because there is some folks who, there is some chatter about the Act 3 being a rock album, because if we're going to call it Renaissance, right? Renaissance meaning revival of an art.
Right.
Right? She's reviving Blackness into dance and electronic, reviving Blackness into country. It could be rock for the third one, which, I mean, I would be down for, and I would rather have the DC 3 reunion personally. Can you revive that instead, please? but I mean, the whole point of this, right, is she's reviving, but she's not, I wouldn't say reviving, like, but like, she's resurging Black culture
as
the purveyor of these genres that we love anyways.
Yeah.
So I totally hear you on that. And I too am get that people are like, oh, her songs have country influences. Oh, she's breaking into a white genre. Y'all, listen, I will not even hold you. I have never liked country. Country has not been my jam.
Because it's
overtaken by white folks. Mm-hmm. But I at least knew better than to think that it was a white genre of music.
Right.
Like, I have always known, like, I have always known that the country was built by Black folks.
And it always starts with us. Like, everything. Country. And I tweeted this week, and I say it again. Everything starts with Black people, regardless if you want to acknowledge it or not. Salsa started with us. Rock started with us. Country started with us. Dance started with us. R&B continues to be us. Like, it's just an easy way to literally, I mean, to push us aside to say, oh, this genre belongs to white people and Beyonce's trying to break in. No, Beyonce is doing exactly what the whole concept of Renaissance is reclaiming a genre that really initially belonged to black people. And I love to see
it. She said, get the fuck up out my house.
Right. Get the fuck up out my house is definitely a word. And with that being said, we might end up having to get about this house if we don't go to a commercial. So with that being said, while I'm over here shining my spurs and doing a little 1-2 step, we're gonna go ahead
and get
into our category and segment and talk about something that has been on our minds since the auntie conversation. We'll be back in a sec.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Well, howdy, y'all.
I know that's
a few
right.
weeks ago, we we noted that we were going to be talking a bit more about the black family dynamic in a few of our segments this month. And John brought up something interesting that we don't talk about often, we believe, the gay cousin. Now, we discussed family and acceptance here and there, specifically since both of us have been spending more time with our families for various reasons. But the one thing we feel like isn't discussed much is the mysterious gay cousin.
Yes.
And after talking with a few friends about it, I realized how true it is that we do not discuss them enough or give them their flowers.
Right.
So let's
get
into it right now.
Right. I am screaming because I make jokes about being the gay cousin all the time. Even funny enough, my cousin David, who is, I don't know if they listen to the show, but I know David knows that I work in the industry, and I know that David knows that we have had conversations both in person and on Instagram about rekindling. We went out to dinner about a year ago. We went out to dinner. We were having this conversation was about how oftentimes the gay cousin is the black sheep or is ousted out of the family because the family doesn't really know how to deal with it. And so there was a part of me that was like, is the gay cousin really a thing? And then so like before we got into the segment, I did a couple of Googles and I saw like there was even a Reddit thread where people were going through Reddit thread and it was explaining and talking about what it's like to be the gay cousin. And I was like, wow, I guess the gay cousin is a universal thing. So I wanted to ask you, like, before I give my experience of what it's like to be a gay cousin, to be the gay cousin, what was it like for you being labeled the gay cousin? And did anyone in your family, I know you mentioned it in your auntie, in the auntie episode, that one of your aunties clocked you, but we didn't go into detail about what it was like for you to grow up as the quote unquote gay cousin. So I guess before I ask you that, were you the only gay person in your family are you the only gay person in your family that's out? That's the question I guess I really want to ask.
So on my mom's side, yes, okay, that I know of. My dad's side, I was not, because I have a brother. I have two brothers who are queer.
Okay, so I didn't know. So you have a different mom. I didn't know that. I thought all of...
Oh, my siblings and I? Oh, no, we all have different... Yeah, no, we all got different moms.
Okay.
Only the first two have the same mom. The other five have different moms. Yes. But we are multiracial.
Oh, wait. Okay, you're blowing my mind here.
Why was a Rolling Stone.
Pause.
Wherever he led...
Yeah. You said you have two older brothers. So I know one... So the sister that I know is your dad's daughter. Just your dad's daughter.
Yes, we are all our dad's kids. The first two brothers in the lineup have the same mom, but the other five brothers, including myself, have different moms.
Wow. Okay. Did not know that. Okay. Go on. Sorry.
Yes, my dad was a hoe. Now you know.
Well, so is mine.
So first of all, I mean, the gay cousin is a thing, and most likely, if you can't name the gay cousin, then you are the gay cousin, right?
Yep.
that's who we is. So let's definitely unpack the archetype of it. I mean, so first of all, yes, I'm the only out person, gay cousin on my mom's side, I'm sure, because we're a very, very small family. And on my dad's side, I mean, there's my brother and I, and then I'm sure there's somebody else. I mean, we had a gunkle who passed away when I was really young. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I guess before I share, I definitely like Wang and get into like the structures of it. Like, because we talked about the aunties and uncles, right, before, but the family hierarchy, aunties and uncles are in the position of power and respect, right? Like, everyone respects the aunties and uncles, or because they see them as the same level as your parents, but the cousins.
Right.
The cousins, however, are the kids to those above them and just peers to each other. So when I think the archetype of the gay cousin usually falls on the younger people or person in the family, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Like usually on someone who is like in the newer generation, who is just seen as different than everybody else. And we know as generations grow, that more queer folks come out. So like, I do have a looming question in my head of like, what's the power of the gay cousin today, right? Like before, mm-hmm. I think like when I was a kid, and I think when you were a kid, right? Like you and I were the gay cousins, or you know, even with my brother, like we are the gay cousins of a very big family, so very few people, right?
Yeah.
But I'm like, is it plural? Like, are there multiple gay cousins in the family now?
Right.
Are they more powerful? Like, you know, and also, what's our concept of gender presentation and identity mm-hmm. in there too? Like, if someone is under the trans umbrella, are they automatically labeled as the gay cousin as well? Too? Like, I have some questions. And I'd be curious your thoughts on that too. Mm-hmm. Like, being non-binary and queer in that way. But I would say my experience so far really is, you know, on my dad's side, I really could not tell you so much about it because I don't rock with the family like that. And I feel like I haven't, and I mean, I'm definitely out, but I don't see them so often to name that versus if I'm with my immediate family, like my siblings and my nieces, we all just know it's like nothing different. And I will say even this past weekend, I was at a funeral with my sister, for someone really close to her, and I passed away, and so I was with like her side of the family, and it was all dope, like it was all like everyone's really dope, everyone's really cool. I don't know or think if there were another gay cousin there. All I know is that like I'm sure we'd be seen as probably the gay cousins, except one relative who true transitioned, but it was dope. But I also was like, oh, but no one's, it's like not a thing here. Mm-hmm. So it was an interesting experience in my dad's family. My mom's in the family. I am curious of what conversation will look like with my cousin's kids, who are really young. Like, they're, like, I think 12, no, one's 13 and one is 10. And so they're at the age now where they could be thinking about it, but they also live in Florida, where they ain't talking about sexuality either. So, honestly, I could go and they'd be like, what's a gay? You know, right, and I'm curious. Like, mm-hmm. And I'm curious what my cousins teach them. I'm curious if my cousin is like, you know, your cousin Jordan is gay, which means he, like, wants to date and be with another man, right? Will they say that, or will they say nothing? Or if I say I'm gay, will they be like, don't say this to my kids, which I probably would be like, I'm gay as hell, bitch.
Right.
Anyway, so
yeah, you bring up a lot of good points about, so and I recognize that this is a generational conversation, because yes, like us coming up as the gay cousin in 2003 ish is mm-hmm. probably, or even 2004, is not the same conversation of what it might mean to be the gay cousin in 2024. But mm-hmm. I will say that I think that there is an archetype that follows all of us, regardless of if you were gay then or if you're gay now. I think that there's still a level of the generation above us, meaning, like, even I would say Gen X is probably a little bit more, because again, we're both millennials, right? So maybe Gen X is a little bit more accepting, but it's definitely the boomers, right, that are still alive, that are still struggling with the idea of what it means to be queer. And so, you know, one of the notes I had made was, I think it's so imperative to have, the reason why we brought this up, right, as we're talking about for Black History Month and wanting to kind of keep this conversation going around the Black family dynamic, I think there's still a lot of struggling that genders, I say ahead of us, the genders above us, the generations above us, they're still struggling and they're still trying to contend with the ways that the world is changing. And so I think that's the reason why, kind of to my point, I know, you know, in our notes, you said, John, share your experience. I think that was part of the reason. It was, you know, in the baby boomers, right? So my mom and my Uncle Paul and my other aunt, you know, my aunt and all of the uncles and aunties that I had on both sides of my family, there was a lot of shit that was happening in the family that we did not talk about, right? And so then they had kids, they had me, and I was so outwardly queer as a little kid, right? There was this thing of I didn't show up like my cousins, and everyone knew that. Everyone felt that. And so it became this kind of thing of, like, you know, my mom, people looking at my mom and saying, well, why are you not doing something to make that little boy fall in line with masculinity and fall in line with the expectations we have for both sides, right? There was, you know, and so I probably shouldn't be putting all my family's names out there, right? But there was my mom's side of the family and my dad's side of the family, and both of them were, again, Jehovah's Witnesses. And so there was this expectation that came with how I performed. And so I got the, while not only was I considered the black sheep, I also got deemed devious in the sense that not only was it the way I was performing, but it was also because I was so vocal about protecting myself, right? Like, I wasn't that kid. I've never been that kid. People bullied me, but I also, like, when my cousins said things that were out of pocket, I checked them. When my uncles and my aunties said things that were out of pocket, I checked them. Like, I was forever that kid, even at a very young age, who knew that the world had it out for me. And so I was like, I gotta take care of me, because my mama tells me that I gotta take care of me. I gotta be up for me. And so I think that that's what a lot of it is. I think when you're looking at, I think a big part of it too is that also that chunk of a lot of our family, the baby boomers and my mom's parents, which I think is, what do we call the people that were born in, like, the 30s and the 40s? Because my grandfather was born in 45.
Ooh. Ooh. Old.
Yeah.
I'm like, damn, they're in 40s.
Don't do that. Okay, like, fans, like, people who are listening, please don't write us. Can't say what about the email. But no, like, I don't know. Okay. What are they called?
Generation name for 1930s and 40s.
Because my grandfather was born 45.
The silent generation is actually
what it's called. They're called? They're called the silent generation?
The silent generation, also known as the traditional generation. People from 1928 to 1945 is the silent generation.
Okay, yeah, because so my grandfather, I think, was born 45 and no longer with us. But I will say all of that to say my grandfather, again, the silent generation, nobody talked about shit. They didn't talk about anything.
Was silent. Yeah.
They were literally silent. The silent nigga generation. Them niggas was silent. They didn't talk about shit. Oh, and so a lot of it was rooted in, you know, I think they had passed down kind of that same idea of like, we see the shit and we know that that little boy is different, but we ain't gonna talk about it. And so both sides of my family dealt with that. And basically they just, in my mind now, it's like, they got to get over it, you know, cause we here and we queer, you know? So I think that's been a big part of it, if that makes sense.
You know, I want to hone in on what you said earlier about being the black sheep and deviant, because I really hate the idea of being made to be the black sheep or the deviant, which really is just like another, like, in the day, these definitions really just mean they're another way of saying that we're too different from other family members, or that we like stray from the beaten path. And so I get frustrated with the idea of being made to be that, but also like, it's true. Like, I am different from anybody else because of who I am. I'm the only person on my mom's side of the family who was mixed and the one who was queer. Like, everybody else is pretty homogenous or mixed in the way that I am as a person of color. Like, I could not believe it's my little cousins identify as POCs. Mm-hmm. I would be like, that's interesting. Being able to think of, like who am I to say that for them? But I'll have to say, like, I'm the only person at present as an adult who has a BIPOC experience and a black experience. Yeah. And so, like, I am different. I quite literally am the black sheep of the family in that way, you know? But, like, I'm thankful that I'm thankful that I'm original, right? Yeah. Like, can you imagine being the same? Mm-hmm. Can you imagine being like everybody else? There is no copy paste here, baby.
T.
Except for my mom's looks. Like, right. I look just like my mama. Like, my mom, for sure, too. Like, copy paste on that too. But like, no copy paste in terms of how I think and how I act, how I roll. Mm-hmm. Like, and on my dad's side of the family, I used to think I was a black sheep because I wasn't as close to them. But then I realized we just actually a whole ass farm. We actually just a whole ass farm. We actually all just different animals here. Mm-hmm. So I feel less of that. I feel you on that feeling of feeling like I'm a black sheep or deviant or be made to feel like I am, because I was made to feel like that, I think, a little bit. My mom's in the family, and I don't feel like that anymore because, when I just don't care. Yeah. Like, I don't care. Also, like, I was raised by the self-proclaimed black sheep of the family herself. So, like, a black sheep, born a black sheep. So, that's bye to that. I'm good. I'm Gucci on that.
Yeah.
But then with my dad's in the family, I realized, like, oh, we actually are all just black sheeps and two ships passing the night trying to survive in these streets, you know.
But I think a big part of it also too is, you know, when our families are so used to looking a certain way, and then, you know, you come along, and I think that's the part of being the quote-unquote gay cousin. For me, it was, you know, I was the one that was naming all of the stuff that was wrong in the family, outwardly. Like, so, you know, you have the folks who talk about it, right, behind closed doors. You have the family that when they're at dinner, they gossip and they talk, you know, here and there. But I was the one, regardless of where we were, was bringing up stuff, you know. And I think that was part of it too, you know, how, especially around with my father. And it's been so interesting because, so I recently went, many of you probably know, I went to Sundance and I watched a documentary there called Daughters. And that documentary raised a lot of things for me. A lot of stuff I'm having to process out through with my therapist about my relationship with my own birth father. And I think a big part of a lot of the reason why I had so much, I only bring that film up to mention that there was a character or person in that film who reminded me a lot of myself, in the sense of was very vocal about the intergenerational trauma that they were experiencing, and they were speaking truth to power around it in the family, and the family was responding to it a certain way. And I said, wow, that person is so much like me at the age of 12 and 13, while I didn't have the words to explain a lot of the I don't even want to call it cognitive dissonance. There was just a lot of pain on both sides of my family. And I was seeing that pain and I was naming that pain. And a lot of people just ruled me out as being not only talkative, I got branded as talkative, but I also got branded as somebody who had a big mouth. And I think that that was, I think that that it was a way for folks to kind of, I'm trying to be, if you've noticed, I'm trying to be very intentional with my words. Don't want to say something and then people believe that I'm talking shit about my family, because that's not the case. I just think that there were a lot of things that my family didn't know how to deal with. And then I came along, and because I was effeminate and because I was so sure of myself and because I saw the issues that were happening and I was naming them, my family didn't know what to do with it. And so I think that that's what happens a lot with a lot of, because you're so self-aware. I think that's the big part of being the gay cousin that a lot of people don't have to deal with. Like, I was highly self-aware at a very young age.
So true.
And I think that because I was so self-aware, not just because I had to know who I was because nobody else was teaching me, I also had to be self-aware because I didn't want to get the shit kicked out of me, right? Like, I had to protect myself. So I think that that's a big part of why the gay cousin gets such a bad rap in a lot of ways, too. It's because we've learned that you learn on. And again, I don't know if this is your experience, and I don't want to speak to your experience being generalized. But I just know for me, I had such a visceral, people responded so viscerally to me as a child that I immediately learned very early on, OK, this world is going to be mean to you whenever they get the chance. So you have to have a slick mouth, and you also got to know how to fight. Those were like the two things that I told myself. And that kind of became the onus of, okay, well, y'all already talk shit about me anyway. Y'all already are treating me poorly anyway. So I'm going to just be the girl that y'all say that I am. And that's how I got coined as the gay cousin, if that makes sense, you know? So
I think it makes perfect sense. And I'll just say, your experience with your family is your experience with your family. So nobody can say anything about that, period. I hope that if anyone's like, well, John's talking shit about their family. Well, bitch, you aren't in the family circle. So you can just see your way out of it. And also, like, families are complicated. Like, you love them as much as you hate them. Like, you love them as much as you critique them. So I just want to hold and own that all the messiness of it is real. And also, like, it's your experience with them. So you get to own that and be transparent about that. Forget what anyone else thinks about it. And I also think, like, you're absolutely right about there's no roadmap for the gay cousin. Mm-hmm. There's nobody that knows how to teach you about yourself, most likely, at least in our generation. I think now we're older, so we can be that for other people if we have them in the family. But there was nobody for us to teach us. Right. And so I think that's such a great point of being the gay cousin means you don't have a blueprint to thrive or succeed. You have to figure out what it means for yourself. You have to fight adversity of the life around you, but also the people who don't understand you at all. And those are the ones who are supposed to love you unconditionally, period, but they don't.
And they don't.
Or oftentimes they don't, right? Like, I will say I definitely feel lucky in my mom's side of the family. And it's only because I'm closer with them than I was my dad's side of the family growing up. So I saw them so much more. But I never felt... It changed when I came out. Mm-hmm. And I came out in levels to my family. Like, I came out to my parents before I came out to, like, my aunt, my mom's sister, and my cousin. And that was at the request of my parents. But I was never really, there wasn't a problem with me being effeminate in some ways, because I did drama in theater. But I think they saw it as I just did it to be a spectacle or to be funny.
Right.
And not as who I actually was. And then when I came out, there was definitely, I think, some shame from my parents of, we don't know how to discuss this or share this, right? Mm-hmm. Which is sad, and, you know, they work through that a lot, which is great. But I think it just makes me realize that I had to face ostracism from people around me in school as a kid. And thankfully, I found a great group of queer folks and queer accepting folks. I had a lot of friends who were queer accepting as well. I think that part of that is growing up in a super diverse area. But the people that I did face who were homophobic or fatphobic and all the above, I had to face that and also face it within my household and the gay cousins. Like, right, like, another thing is, like, when you say the gay cousin, we aren't giving nuance. So that's someone's kid, and we don't know how their parents are treating them. Mm-hmm. Like, as a gay cousin, we may all think, oh, they're cool or they're weird, but they also could be getting beat at home,
right?
For all we know, or they could be getting loved on, for all we know, right? Like, we actually don't know what the experience is, but most likely it was most likely the latter in our generation and previous ones.
Yeah.
So I really hear and feel that so much because the gay cousin is somebody that isn't appreciated enough for being often the door opener in these spaces, mm-hmm. right? The gay cousin isn't given the flowers they deserve to be the one that maybe not even open the door, but like cracked it open and tried to get to open and then said, this is for you to now open more.
I was going to even say, or being the person, like I said, who I was, that's naming the issues in the family and trying to break. You know, I know people hate hearing the term intergenerational curses, but a lot of times it is you, it is the gay cousin who is saying, I'm being treated shitty. And I also see other people in our family being treated shitty.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Mm-hmm. Like, why are we all...
And when she...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when you shine light on shit, people get all kinds of mad about it.
Baby,
let me tell you. They're like, oh, we talk about, I had no idea. And then you're like, maybe, you know you saw. you know you saw. Like, you had your own flashlight, bitch. Don't try to play dumb now.
Hello?
Like, you know you saw. Baby, you just mad because everybody
else sees
it.
A whole Black & Decker.
Flashlight.
And it's the whole room is just
the high beams is on, baby. But don't like you can see. In the low beams. Okay, the high beams is on now. Mm-hmm. So I feel, and also can we just hold space for the families who got gay cousins with partners, with the partners introduced as a cousin's friend or roommate. Yeah, like I just think about that a lot too. Like I'm not that person because I don't have a partner yet. But if I have a partner, I for sure will be like, this is not my roommate or my friend. This is my man. I have seen families where they're like, oh, that's so and so's friend, and I'm like,
no, bitch,
I'm committing some nasty acts with that person, we are more than friends.
I know
with
that's
ma'am,
right.
Okay.
Yeah.
If we in bed together and we do some things that we cannot name in church, that is my partner. Yeah. Okay,
that's how my family found out about my partner, though. I think I've told this story before, but actually at my master's, and I think that's where things started to get real rocky with my family for me. We had already been on the rocks, but this is when things started to boulders. Yes, we were rocky before, but bitch, we was on the boulders after. But at my master's level graduation, my uncle came and my partner was sitting next to me. And when I introduced him, as my partner. And I think my uncle knew I was queer, but I don't think that he knew that I had a partner. And I think seeing Jonathan, like, it confirmed everything my uncle, like, because my uncle partly raised me too. This is my mom's brother. And so he was always... Ugh, it's so hard because I'm actually writing, you know, I'm writing a book right now, and there are parts of my chapters where I have to write about my relationship with my uncle. Me and my uncle have a very, very interesting relationship. So all that to say, I think his frustration and his fears were confirmed when he met Jonathan. And then my dad crashed my doctoral graduation. My dad was not invited, and he just came, and he met my partner there. And it was a really weird, interesting dynamic because I also think that was that moment that my father had to confirm in his head that he had a son, quote unquote, that was queer and didn't want to acknowledge that. Right. So it's just weird. But yes, very much giving a lot of Black people. It is very much we always have the uncle or the aunt and somebody being like, oh, that's their best friend. And it's like, no, they're not a friend, sis. They are more than friends, honey. Like friends. They live in a one bedroom, one bathroom.
I'm saying, like, they're more than just bed buddies. Okay,
hello, like
we're butt buddies here. Let's calm down.
I know, yes, if I could name this episode butt buddies, I would. My God,
I swear to God, like when I have a man and if anyone tries to say this is my friend, I'll be like, I do not. Goodbye. Do not put that on me. Like
goodbye.
This. Nope.
Goodbye, Joe Daniels. Goodbye.
Okay, you know what,
I hated him.
You're right.
I'm leaving.
Chris, I hope you bleep that part. Just hope you bleep that part. Just bleep that phrase. No one has to know I said that.
What a moment.
No, you are right. You're right. Y'all, before the FCC tries to take us down, we gotta take a quick break. And when we get back, it will be time to heal. More in just a moment.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
All righty. I don't know any other terms outside of howdy to keep the whole the boot clicking going. In
the boot.
I don't know. I don't. Anyway, I don't know any other term. Yeehaw! Yes. Well, howdy, partners. We're back. But all that to be said. So for this week, for How You Healing, we are going to get into a conversation. So we've had. I'll say this. I've actually had 2 people DM me, and then I've also had other folks in other spaces mention this to me. I know that last week we talked about seasonal affective disorder, and y'all know that we're real big on this show about making sure we have through lines and that we're not just kind of leaving people out there to hang. We talk a lot about our therapist or conversations that come up with our therapist. And some of the questions that we have gotten from listeners are, how in the hell did y'all find good therapists? How did you find therapists that understood you as Black people, understood you as queer people, understood you as fat people, as Black, queer, and fat people? And so when we were in our meeting, I had brought it up to Joho. I said, I think it's about time. We're going to be on episode 82. We have not really broke down how we found, like, we've talked about how we got to therapy, but we never really got to a conversation about how do we actually, like, hold the therapist accountable and things of that nature around therapy. And so I brought it up. Joho thought it was a great idea. And so I wanted to go ahead and touch on it quickly. So I'll say first, kind of, you know, did you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Let's go first.
I was gonna say, I think so. For me, one of the things that I had brought up in our meeting was, I always look at therapy as being like, okay, I'm giving these people an hour of my life. You know, every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks, whatever the case may be, I need to make sure that I feel 110% comfortable with sharing parts of myself with these people. And I know a lot of people say race has nothing to do with it, but I will say very upfrontly that it does. I had a Latinx therapist before I have the therapist I have now, who is a Black woman who I think is queer, but has never really told me she was queer. But all of that to be said, I've had a white therapist and I've had a Latinx therapist. And what I know now is that there were a lot of conversations that were rooted in anti-Blackness that happened to me, right? And so I'm not saying that all Latinx therapists, I want to make sure that's clear, so that way people don't DM us and write us, talk about, y'all talk about all, no, I didn't say all of them. I said that the ones I've had, and particularly in my experience, were giving anti-Black feelers, right? And so some of that is why I parted with them, because I was like, I don't feel safe here. Like, these spaces don't feel safe. I was out like Ellen. I was like, I got to get out of here. Dust. Like, I had to go. And so I switched therapists. But one of the things that I will say in my mind, I always tell BFFs, if they're looking for a therapist, ask these two questions in my mind. Ask these two questions. They will tell you a lot about your therapist and what type of service you're going to get from them. Ask them what their fat politics are. I think it's fair, because I think for me, as a, even right now, like when I go see my therapist this upcoming, so this episode will drop on Tuesday, the next day I will be in therapy. I have to have a conversation with my therapist now that my A1C is high and I'm having to go back to what feels like a diet, and I don't like it. Like, I don't like feeling like I'm on a diet. It brings up a lot of feelings for me. So all of that to be said, I appreciate that I have a therapist that I can have conversations about fat politics with, that gets me and understands where I'm coming from and won't shame me for the way that I feel. But also, too, having a therapist who has a solid definition of intersectionality. Having a therapist who is able to understand what intersectionality means and what it means for me and why it's so important, that those two things, if my therapist was to tell me next week, hey, John, I'm leaving this practice or I'm leaving the field, you have to find a new therapist, that would be immediately where I would start. You know, and I'll even say this too before I give it to you, Joho. It's not enough just to say I have a Black therapist, because not all Black therapists have a good fat politic or have a good hold on intersectionality. So I will say, if you are looking for a therapist, specifically a Black therapist, asking them about their fat politics and what their definition of intersectionality is will literally begin, it will help begin that process for you to be able to find out if your therapist is good for you. But what has worked for you?
Okay, so originally, I love this. Originally, I said that I wrote since I saw what you had put, that I had nothing to add. But I will say one thing I will add in terms of looking for a therapist is, most likely if you have healthcare or if you're looking at therapists, you usually can see like a registry of the therapists that are available to do. Like, you don't just do it and find like a random one. I think at this point in time, right, you'll be able to sift through and choose a person, most likely based off what you need. And so read the bio. So I know because I have Kaiser, right, for Kaiser. And for the one that I don't know if it's through all SoCal or just where I have, but essentially they outsource a service, and on that service I had to go and like look for a therapist to use, but they had filters of like person of color, LGBTQ, topic issues like anxiety, body dysmorphia, all these things, and so I looked at queer therapists and like read all their bios. Some did not have bios, and honestly, if they have no bios, that's a red flag to you. IMO. Some had short bios, another red flag. Bitch, if you have three sentences, girl, I don't know what you do. I need to have something personal that I know that's about you. And so reading bios that felt good, and knowing that they're allocated as queer competent is really special to me, and being a person of color themselves too. I think, right, I doubt there's a space for fat folk, politics or weight neutral on the drop down menu at present. So I think John's point about asking them fat politics is really great. I'd love to color in about retaining your therapist and or breaking up with them. Yes. Because our therapists, whether we want to admit it or not, like, are also people.
Yeah.
And they may be fluid in who they are or who they become. And so you may find your therapist to be amazing for a period of time. then you may find that they actually no longer fulfill you in what you come to them for, or maybe you've hit your wall with them. Like, I've had, like, my first therapist I had for years. I had him for years before I went to school, then I left because I moved, and when I came back, he was my therapist again, and he was amazing. Like, he adapted to who I was. He felt so, and I was shocked. Like, as a white gay man, he was very prepared for anything that I brought in about being a person of color, about being queer, about being fat. Like, he was a great therapist, right? Mm. And I appreciate that he affirmed me and validated me, but also pushed me and challenged me as well.
Amen.
Which also would say, don't get a therapist. I would just don't have a therapist that just affirms you all the time. Like
that part.
Like that is like that, because then that means that you just want you want a therapist. Like, you just want a best friend.
You just want validation, just girl.
Okay. And like a therapist will tell you. Yes. A therapist won't say you're wrong. They will say, have you considered this instead?
Right.
Or like, is that actually feel good to you? Like, my therapist I have now, Miss Girl, often, will if I say something, she will be like, so why do you think you have to do this? And I'm like, because I do.
Yeah.
And she's like, but do you? And I'm like, right, I guess right. I don't. You know, so like a good therapist will challenge you a bit and help steer you towards something. So know that like that can happen too. That they won't always be the person that you think they are or that they want them to be. And if you know, like with John, right? John's going to bring up a new conversation and talk about with the therapist. And John may find the therapist is like, great girl, got it, let's talk about it. Or the therapist could come out like, well, John, and say something like fatphobic or, you know, like or anti-black in that concept too. Then John will have to figure out, do I need to bring up with the therapist?
Yeah,
you know? And so like when you bring up new things to the therapist, see how they react to it and adapt to it, mm-hmm. because they're allowed to, and you're allowed to break up with them.
Amen.
Like, I've gone through 4 therapists in the past year and a half. And
truly, not it being like a Destiny's Child situation, girl. You got to vote the holes off the island.
We can send you your luggage. The first one I found, this is a lesson for myself. I knew from like our second session that they probably weren't the right one, but I didn't want to be the person to be like, to like break up with them in that way. Like, I was like, oh, I feel so bad to do this, right? And then like after like a 4th session, they had like, they were doing something that I was like, I do not get what this is doing.
I can't. Yeah.
And so then we scheduled the next session, and then they went around and said, I can't be a therapist anymore, which did me a solid, right? Part of me was like, bitch, really? I was out here trying to give you the benefit of the doubt, but you said no to me? Whatever. But work and deserved, because
work.
I need to find somebody else.
You're like, work, and work. However.
And work, girl, go on.
Yeah,
sis.
Yeah.
You know, the second therapist was really, really great, but they affirmed me a lot, which was nice. But after a while, I was like they legit would be like, I don't know why you're in therapy. And I'd be like, because I'm self-aware, right. But like, I'm here because I have a problem. Right. I have general life that I want to talk about with you. And so I was like, I appreciate your time. You're amazing. I think I'm gonna have to go find somebody else now who can like, mm-hmm. you know, give me to the next step. And mm-hmm. Then I had a third therapist who was amazing, but then she had to leave to some family stuff.
Yeah.
Which reminds me, she said she'd come back, but she never came back. So I miss her every day. Oh. Mary, I miss you, girl. but the therapist I have now, like, fantastic, yeah. right? And she's somebody who affirms me, who validates me in some ways, and also when I'm going through something, she will ask questions and probe deeper and be like, are you sure you want to do this? And like, what does it actually mean to you? And so there is no rule saying you must be with any therapist you find.
Right,
like, therapists, like all people, are just another relationship that you have to encounter mm-hmm. and go through. And you can grow through it and say bye.
Amen.
You can leave it, or you can stick mm-hmm. with it, right? That choice is up to you.
Yeah.
But I would say be mindful of those pieces when it comes to retaining one, and don't be afraid to terminate your relationship with one too, especially if they aren't serving you well.
Yeah.
You can find other ones. And if it's a matter of your healthcare provider, you can work with your provider and say, I need different options than this.
Yeah.
How do I get different
I
options?
I do it all the time.
Or
that is like, the one thing you will find with me.
Network yep. cost.
Same thing with KP. I'm with Kaiser, and if that is one thing about me and Kaiser, I am going to tell them these services do not help me. I need to find somebody else. I'm actually in the mind right now that I know I need to find a new another. I just feel like what do they call them? The primary care doctor. That's what it is. My primary care doctor.
PCPs. Yeah, yeah.
I don't feel like she is doing for me what I don't feel like she truly hears me. And so I'm in the mind of like, even after I get off this recording, that is what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to call them and say, hey, I need to find a new primary care doctor who can truly help me feel my best when I see them. Cause the one I currently have is very dismissive, but anyway, all that to be said, I think it's very important. I wanted to say this and then we'll go ahead and skirt out into the third segment, but I was going to say, if you feel worse than you did when you sat down with your therapist, find a new therapist. Like that is the thing that I had to learn very quickly. Anytime I sit down, and I've mentioned Lindsay before, if I sit down with Lindsay, I know by the end of the session, even if I'm challenged, even if I was crying, even if I was really upset, even if I still feel so much better when I'm done with Lindsay, right?
Like I walk away like, damn, she did that.
She did what she needed to do. She did her job, right?
Okay.
But if I'm more frustrated or if I feel like nothing, and I've been in this situation before, so that's how I can speak on it. If I'm more frustrated leaving the conversation, that is your key indicator that something is off, and trust your gut with your therapist. You need to find somebody else. My hope is that in the coming weeks, we can find someone who not only understands, and I don't know if I know anybody. I have a whole bunch of friends who have degrees in different ways in different places, and I would love to bring someone on and could talk through kind of this notion of the importance of having, you know, a therapist who looks, but also could break down kind of like, I know there's a lot of people, and it's funny because the friend zone brought this up this week. There are a lot of us who don't understand our benefits, and I would love to be able to bring someone on the show who could talk to us about like, how does benefits work with a therapist? So that way we know, you know, if you don't have coverage, what's the best way to get a therapist?
I love this idea.
Yeah, if you have coverage, you don't understand your coverage, how do you find a therapist in network, out of network, like all of these things. And so I think that's one of the things I'm going to put on our docket for us to have in the coming weeks is a conversation on like navigating both primary care and all of that. Since I just got a physical, girl, and your girl's doing all right. She just got to get an A1C down. But other than that, she doing all right. And I know that's right.
Okay, shake it to
these. Yeah, shake it to these. All right, that's for the folks watching us on the YouTubes. All right, with that being said, we have one more break to take. But when we come back, we're going to come back with y'all's favorite segment. More in a sec.
From BBC Radio 4. Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah.
Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
All right, y'all. So we are back for our Yes, Ma'am and our No, Ma'am, Pam segment. Joho, did you want to go first this time or you want me to go?
You go first because you have to go first twice in a row.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I was just trying to extend the invitation to make sure that it was bad.
Don't be nice.
Okay. So I failed to mention at the top. I know we talked a lot about Beyonce and we talked a lot about the whole country, blah, 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 blah. But I wanted to save part of that conversation for our Yes, Ma'am, in the sense that I wanted to shout out folks who are doing the Lord's work and are calling the radio stations that won't play Beyonce's latest song and playing it in their ear. I saw like two or three videos on TikTok where people had like the song queued up on a computer. And then when the radio station answered, they played the song.
Hello, 16 Carathies. Yes.
Yes. And so it made me laugh because I said, that's Beyonce's weird. Fans, if there's anybody in this world that I don't want to fuck with, them. I ain't fucking okay. I'm not fucking with the
what
Beehive.
What you want to play us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Because the Beehive is something else. They will get you together quick. But shout out to the Beehive. Shout out to all of the people that are supporting, or even to the people that are not supporting Beyonce, because she's going to get her things. Whether you want her to get them or not, Beyonce is going to be at the top of somebody's chart. Regardless, it's just that's how it's gonna be. You just gonna have to deal. You and your white fragility, girl. You just gonna have to deal, because Beyonce ain't going nowhere anytime soon. All right, so this one, my No Man Pam, it might be a little long. I did want to say this, and I hope it doesn't open a floodgate of conversation. Last week, I shared on the show as well on social media that I learned that my A1C is an A1 mess. What that means is that, and I knew it was coming for me. I just didn't know how long I had. And she finally caught up with me. My mom has been diabetic for years. My grandfather was diabetic. My father's father and mother passed away from diabetes. So I knew that I was predisposed to it. I just kind of like, I played in the face of diabetes and she won. And so basically at this point, my doctor is saying like, I'm still on the teeter between pre-diabetic and diabetic, but they're basically telling me to slow down on all the sugar and the carbs. And I can say that I've done very good in the last 7 days. My A1C number, or at least when I prick my finger and I check my numbers, they seem to be getting better. I'm on medicine, all of the stuff that I need to do to take care of myself. Okay, so I'm sharing a lot about my life. And also for listeners, it is imperative, please go to the doctor. Please take care of yourself if you can. If you are in a place to go to the doctor, please go to the doctor. I know that the doctor can be a very, very murky situation for a lot of us, especially our trans family members. I don't even want to say brothers and sisters, because transness is not just limited to maleness or femaleness. So our trans family, right? I know a lot of it is hard. And even for me, like I said, I want to make sure that I'm not just telling you to do it. I am in a place now, even for myself, where I'm working through trying to find a good doctor, because I'm almost 40 and my body is telling me like, girl, you've done a lot in these 40 years. And we're kind of done. So with that being said, I had posted online that I needed to take better care of myself. And you know what happened? What do you think happened? thing happen?
I mean, I feel like this is obvious. So there's people were like, oh, let me tell you how I lose weight. Let me tell you why I'm happy.
Correct. Yes. So that is exactly what happened. Everyone from my Instagram, everyone in my Twitter feed, some of the people on my Facebook, everybody flooded my mentions with information about how to lose weight. And I want to make it very clear that, like, everyone was giving me diet advice and I was like, yo, I didn't say I needed to lose weight. What I said was I need to eat healthier and I need to watch my sugar intake. Those were the two things that my doctor told me. Your cholesterol is good, but it could be better. And your A1C is not where it needs to be. So you need to take.
Also, did you ask for help or you just said you didn't ask for help on those stories? You literally just
didn't.
Y'all, don't be snooping where you weren't asked to snoop.
Didn't ask for any type of help. And everybody and their mama started telling me that they were doing keto. People were telling me that they basically were starving themselves to death and working out. And I had one friend actually respond back after they had saw my post and said, yo, that was me. I know I did that. I am so sorry. And I want to shout that friend out. I appreciate that friend took responsibility for the ways that they inserted themselves in that conversation and didn't really need to. But I guess the reason why it's my no man Pam is that it really irritates me, and it makes me very sad that we always feel like when people say we need to take care of ourselves, that we automatically start pushing the notion that someone instantly needs to or wants to lose weight. And I want to make it very clear, and I was going to actually tweet this and I didn't. I said, I want to make it clear on the mic that I struggle with the whole notion of weight loss even more now. I used to be that girl, and I'll say this transparently. I used to be that girl that thought being skinny and losing weight meant that you were healthy and that you were doing your best and that you look good and all that. And then I saw, I think, kind of where my revelation happened for me was when I saw Sam Smith lose all their weight and I saw how the world treated them. I said, y'all don't give a fuck about weight loss. Y'all truly only care about someone being fuckable. That's what that is. Oh, okay, bet. So that's where my fat politic changed, right? And so I want to say this, both, you know, for folks who listen and for folks who are watching, we need to, like, and I say this collectively, like, weight loss does not equal healthy. Healthy does not equal being skinny. We need to stop assuming that when someone says, I have to take better care of my health, that it immediately means that they want to lose weight. I know people who are thin that are doing really fucked up things to their body to stay thin. I know people who were thin that were in the best shapes of their lives, running on a treadmill, dropped dead, literally on the treadmill, in the best shape of their life. So you cannot tell me that by being thin, that your health is automatically better, because I know too many people who are very skinny that have high cholesterol, can't run a mile, smoke a pack a day, are not eating healthy. And even though they're skinny and thin and the world lauds them for it, they are the most unhealthiest person that you could ever meet. And so I really wanted to say that, because I feel like it goes without saying that we have a problem with weight loss in this country. We have a problem. I mean, obviously, there's so many people, and I know I'm taking up a lot of time. There are a lot of people on the big O. I call Ozempic that's what I call it now, the big O. There are people that are on the big O and are saying, I don't care what happens to my body. I just want to be skinny. And it's sad. It's really sad. Like we've mentioned before, Oprah saying, I don't care. I'm just happy to know that there's something that's going to help me be thin. And it's like, come on, girl. Like, your health is so much more than your size. Like, it really is. And so just the next time someone mentions to you, hey, I need to take care of myself, please don't assume that it's weight loss. Ask them directly, what do you need help with? Where can I give my opinion, especially if I'm asking for it? But 9 times out of 10, fat people don't need your opinion. We really don't.
And really get out of your head the idea that you know how to care for somebody better than they know how to care for themselves.
Amen.
Like, you aren't their parent. You aren't their doctor.
Say that.
Like, especially if you just follow the bitch on social media. Like, there's no way in hell that you just follow a person and you're like, oh, well, I, like, you know better than that person how to care for themselves. You don't. So don't do that. Whoo, whoo. So I'll start with my No Man Pam.
Yes.
Because it's along the same line. And I was scrambling to find one today, and then lo and behold, this I got an ad, which I was like, wow, look at God. Giving me my No Man Pam like that. And the ad was for I'm so sad, it's for Hims. I use Hims for skincare. I know they have like other supplements, they have like hair growth, and they're basically branding themselves like a fully comprehensive wellness type brand, and mm-hmm. now and they recently launched like a heart health function. Now they're getting to like comprehensive quote health, and so the ad came up as a Hims weight loss program, and I was immediately furious. Well, at first I saw it, I said, okay, please don't let it be what I think it is, because I love me some Hims and the skincare stuff. The last thing I want is my skincare gurus to then become. To become healthcare gurus, but
yeah,
here they are doing the thing. So I already was like, but let me just explore what this means. Like, what are they doing, right? The first thing they're doing. So I can understand their mission to make comprehensive care and quote unquote weight loss affordable for people. Right. I love that you want to make things accessible. That's great. Where I got frustrated was that with the medications, they're using four different medications as part of the weight management program, right? So apparently, you'd work with a licensed nutritionist. You would get like a food meal plan, a movement plan, because what they're trying to tackle is the barriers in which they feel that they discovered to successful weight loss is movement, diet. And like wellness and then medications, right? So then they give you medications. One medication is metformin, which I'm very familiar with because my dad was on metformin for most of his life. Metformin is a medicine or prescription for people with diabetes for blood sugar control. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I was like, why are you giving? So like they're framing it right as like helps control blood sugar intake and helps with your appetite and helps with cravings, but like. That is a diabetic medicine. Why would you give that to somebody who's not diabetic? Then they have Contrave, which is a combination of an anti-opioid medication and an antidepressant that moonlights as an appetite suppressant. I'm familiar with the antidepressant medication. I know folks who are on it who have lost weight because of it, not because they want to, because it's also an appetite suppressant. Right. And so I'm like, why are you giving people who like? Like, they give them the anti-opioid because I believe it's framed as to help stop cravings or, like food addictions. And then the antidepressant to suppress appetite. Which I'm like, you're giving them medications that is not what it's designed for. Give it to them. And I don't think, how is this right? And so I'll just say, I believe that anyone should have access to what makes them happy with their own bodies. Like, I believe that. And I'm not a pharmacist, so I can't tell you whether or not there are dangers with this program. That's not my gig. It does bring up points about the industrialization of weight loss under the guise of improved health. Like, you want to improve health, sis? Improve food systems. Expand culturally competent healthcare providers. Shorten work days. Help people have a better ease of life. Yeah. Create more public transit. Encourage people to move their bodies more. Like, if you want to improve health, solve the actual system problems that are barriers to people having healthy lives, right? Stop building ports and polluted factories in lower income areas. Like, mm-hmm. there are so many things you can be doing. And y'all, mm-hmm. and I love Hims, I really do. So, but I'm like, why did you think this would be your lane to get into? And like, why is
money.
This okay?
Money. Capitalism.
And that's what makes me sad. So I'm like, if someone from Hims hears this, or Hims and Hers hears this, and is like, we want to talk to you about this, like, go ahead. I'd love to talk about you. Let's bring in some. I want to make it very clear, not to step on you.
I'm sorry. I want to make it very clear that we're not knocking people who want to lose weight. If you want to lose weight, lose weight. Okay, that's fine.
I want that for you too, and I also want you in a way that doesn't like potentially put you in danger.
Right.
Like if you want to lose weight, that's
what I was going to say.
I will support your lifestyle that like you want to do. I can't support like a brand that's target was never this to begin with.
Right.
That then launches this new vertical, a brand that could be harming you. And I'm not saying that they are. Like I don't know what the side effects are. The same way you have doctors come out about Ozempic, right, saying like we don't have the data yet to actually talk about what is effective for people or not. So if you want to lose weight, I want to be there to support you, but I want to make sure that it's done in a way that doesn't possibly endanger you and your health
and
further.
That's the thing that I feel like I really want to underscore in this conversation, right? I want to underscore that we are body positive, and yes, we are a celebratory fat podcast, but I also want to celebrate that health is an important piece. And if you are doing dangerous things to your body to try to adhere to the standards of society, you are not celebrating health. That is the scary part for me. And that's what I keep saying. It's kind of the same thing I say about millionaires and billionaires. A lot of people who are millionaires and billionaires are probably doing some really fucked up shit to keep that money. It is my same belief with a lot of people who are thin. A lot of the people that we laud and we celebrate for their size are harming themselves. And it may not be harming right now, but they are harming themselves in various ways to keep that weight off, whether it be mentally or whether it be physically. And so I think we have to, the same way that we need to, there's a word that I'm looking for, it starts with the D. The way that we need to basically disassociate, I think is the word. Yeah. The way we need to disassociate from the idea that being skinny is beautiful and being skinny is what's going to make our lives better. We need to
destigmatize fatness.
Yes, we need to destigmatize the idea. I'll say this and then I'll shut up. In our earlier, in one of the earlier episodes of the show, we had Kelsey on, and Kelsey had mentioned something on Instagram just recently that I loved. And they said that, you know, it was never about their face card. They were never ugly. You know, they were like, my face was always cute. It was my size that made everybody not attracted to me. And that's the truth. That is the truth. I know I'm good looking. I know I'm look at the material.
Check the material. Check the material. Yes.
I know I'm good looking. Maybe, however, I know that people don't find me attractive because I'm very secure in my body size now. And I'm not looking for validation in my body size now in ways that I used to in the past. And so a lot of people have a hard time with that. They have a hard time with the idea that I don't need validation from society on my size anymore, because I'm not, I just keep saying this, I'm not going to kill myself for you to find me attractive. Fuck that.
Yep.
I'm just not. So that's my point.
Thank
but go
you,
off
thank
sis.
You. No, thank you. I mean, I feel exactly the same way. So thank you so much for that. My yes, ma'am, Pam, is to Bart, bitches. And I say this because people try to eat me up last week on my stories, because I had posted about good public transit in the city when I was on BART on my little morning commute. I was reading on BART and people were like, and I said, having good transit is really important. Like, just like a general thing, right? And people were like, is BART good transit? Is BART actually good transit? Listen here, people. Okay? When you live in San Diego or Los Angeles, public transit does not take you everywhere that you need to go, and it is not as accessible as it could be. Like, there is infrastructure here of a bus system, yes, but the trolley system down here only goes through downtown and to parts of inland San Diego, but not like nowhere near me. There's no trolley station near me. Like, I can't access a train to go somewhere. There are buses, but that's not the transit that I take. But like, I'm so sorry, but the Bay got a good ass system. Like, BART goes throughout the entire Bay. They expanded it. You have great buses. The city has the muni system. Like, and BART stations are truly in many, many places. Like, there's so many places that you can access BART. So, like, I'm so sorry, y'all. But yes, ma'am, him to fucking BART to me. Y'all try to eat me up and try to gather me. But, like, let me tell you right now, if y'all have better transit, good for you. I call that a privilege. It's a privilege. And it is a luxury if you don't have it all. So, for someone who does not have it like that, it was great for me to read to read my little book on my morning commutes and my afternoon commutes and feel great about it. And like, and as someone who grew up with BART, I understand that BART also sometimes can be dangerous. BART sometimes isn't always the easiest, safest thing to do. And mm-hmm. also like has a lot of great moments as well too, and a lot of good things going for it. And recently the BART train's like nice. It's like, I don't know what happened when they did the little update, but now the maps are all digital. The seats was some type of leather material and not just like some nasty ass cloth. I was like, oh, this is nice. Oh, okay. This is a swaggy ass little BART train. Go off. So yes,
what
ma'am.
Is that word?
Thank you.
It's giving gentrification.
It's giving up.
Upgrade.
It was looking overdue upgrades, baby. overdue upgrades, okay?
Not overdue upgrades. I'm screaming. Oh my God, my Lord Jesus, today. Well, with that being said, we love y'all and we thank y'all for listening. Please send us your thoughts, your feedback, and your emails to blackfatfempod@gmail.com. You can also send us your thoughts via social media by interacting with our post on Instagram and Twitter by using the handle blackfatfempod. Queen Joho, where can the dolls find you? Per usual,
my loves, you can find me at Joho Daniels across all socials, at my website at JohoDaniels.com, or gearing up for the revived X-Men series on Disney Plus, which I'm so excited for. X-Men 97, which will be a continuation of X-Men the Animated Series, which was my fucking show when I was a kid. And okay. I live for the conservatives who are mad about this show being here, as the X-Men, if the X-Men had never been about civil rights in the first place. I saw a tweet that recently, it was a threads, and someone recently was like, what did they say? They're like, people are going to have to face really, really soon that the Avengers are actually the cops and the X-Men are actually the real heroes. And I was like,
oh wow. I never
bitch.
Thought about that.
But I was like, gag. I looked at was really like, oh, honestly, you're not wrong.
Wow,
the X-Men have always been, they have been my favorite comic. They have been my favorite team. Like, I have always loved them. And I always love because it, like, so many of their storylines and themes are they pull from like actual social issues. Like,
right,
you can't tell me that like mutant lives is not just Black Lives Matter. Like, that really has always been for me.
Yeah. You're not wrong. It's funny because years ago, I knew someone who was in a doctoral program, and I asked them what their dissertation was on. It was a media. I remember it being a media PhD.
Yes.
And they did a whole dissertation about how X-Men was obviously about the civil rights, but specifically about how and why Professor X was Martin Luther King. And how the other one, what's his name?
Malcolm X?
How Magneto was
okay.
Malcolm X. And there was this whole, they were writing a whole thing about it, which I thought was very interesting. Okay. It was, I think their whole dissertation, and I'm not sure where it went or if they ever finished it. But they were talking about how if we look at a lot of different characters and comics and different things, how they're inspired by civil rights leaders and things. And so I thought that was so interesting. And yeah, I'm here for it. I also grew up. So when I saw the promo for, I thought it was just they were bringing.
So it is, and they brought it back 2 years ago. I was like, wait, is this? I was like, oh no, I see now. Yeah. You thought they were just putting the old show back on.
Yeah, I thought I thought all the stuff from the 90s was being added to Disney Plus, and I was like, oh, that's cool for folks like myself who want to go back and watch the old stuff. But I didn't know that this was like a re-up of what's happening
in the past too.
I love that.
And so this new series will literally just take place right after the series finale of the last show, which is both cool and also a little wild. So I'm like,
Is it also going to be animated?
Yes, it is. It is.
Oh, okay.
It'll probably look a little bit different. Like, I know they have some 3D modeling and not just fully 2D, but same characters. They're gonna do some new comic storylines, but it looks really good.
Yeah,
they did a lot of the same cast. Who came back to voice characters, which was really exciting.
I know that's right. Not them pulling up and saying, hey, 20 years later, come on, 30 years later, come on down.
And I will say, and they also, like, for example, there are some characters that are played by people of color, and they are hiring people of color to play those characters as well. So they brought back the old cast to voice some different characters and to authentically cast the characters like in their role. And I was like,
I really appreciate that people are
Marvel,
doing that now.
I see you. Yes, I see you, bitch. Come on.
Love it. Love to see it. All right, y'all. Well, as for me, you can find me outside of the Krispy Kreme doors watching the donuts float on the conveyor because I can't eat them as freely as I once did. And shout out to the friends who love to send me donuts and love to send me stuff. Y'all can send me fruit baskets now because I got to eat fruit over processed sugar. But anyway, you can also find me at Dr. John Paul crying about how hungry I am. Or you can visit my website at www.drjohnpaul.com. We want to thank our team of producers, managing executive producer Anna Hosnia and Rebecca Ramos, and our supervising producer, Bay Wang, for handling all of the logistics that come with this show. And everyone over at iHeart, that yes, you over there, Will, I see you, Mr. Will Pearson, for keeping our show up and running. We would also like to shout out our wonderful mix master, sound engineer, and editor, Chris Rogers, because without him, you wouldn't be able to see us nor hear us.
Okay.
It's been another show, y'all. Stay black, fat, femme, and fabulous, and remember to tell your lovers and friends that Usher, John, and Luda had to do it again. I love us for real.
Luda.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Become a part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry with an education from Trinity School of Natural Health. Trinity graduates can empower their communities through natural health principles and techniques, whether they go into practice to guide others toward their wellness goals or open a store to sell their favorite health products. Trinity grads are equipped to change lives. With 19 online programs and flexibility to fit your busy schedule, including the popular Certified Natural Health Professional, you can get the training that helps you turn your passion into a career. And here's the best part. You can earn the certification in less than a year. From herbology to naturopathy and health coaching, Trinity allows you to make a meaningful difference by helping others live healthier, happier lives. Don't wait any longer to pursue your passion for natural health. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.